And now, Gendelach, we are starting the ninth chapter.
We don't need this.
Of the story of Rab Moshe from Poizna, the Alter Rebbe Zede.
It's not on this page.
And we're up to chapter.
It's not on this page.
Okay. No, it's where it's supposed to be. We're up to the 114th chapter of Sefer HaZichronos. Rab Moshe, the former Reish HaKol of the great city of Poizna, was very, very impressed from this interesting story that Gedalia Moshe wrote to him about the Ger Tzedek, Christian de la Tziata, whose name was really Rabbi Avraham. And this fact actually strengthened something which he already believed, knew, and thought that you have to make booklets in different languages in order to explain to people the truth, the emes of Torah, to Yidin, and also for not Yidin, to show them that Yiddishkeit is the right way. Even if they don't, not, and this doesn't say in Sefer HaZichronos, but a Goy doesn't have to become a Ger, he has to just be a Ben Noach and keep, you know, believe in the Torah and believe in Hashem and do what the Torah wants a Goy to do. But a Goy shouldn't believe in Shtusim. So for this purpose, Reb Moshe established a special association, a special alliance, a group of people that they together were involved in explaining Yiddishkeit. The chief, Rav Moshe, put on in the head of this organization, Gedalia Moshe, who now was offered to be a professor in the Sorbonne University in Paris. However, Gedalia Moshe refused, even though it was a very chashev job. Sorbonne is a very chashev university. He refused because he wanted to serve the needs of Yiddin and Yiddishkeit. Rav Moshe saw it as his obligation to help Gedalia Moshe in this work, and not only because he wanted it to be Matzliach, also because he felt responsibility towards this young man who he made him a Baal Tshuva when he was close, Chas V'Shalom, to Shmad. So for this reason, Rav Moshe stayed for a long time in London, and he prepared the ground. He did all different preparations for the Association of Explaining Judaism, the chief of the organization was Professor Gordon, who lived in London because of this. And the importance of this organization right away became recognized by the leaders of Yiddishkeit in many countries and lands. One day, Gedalia Moshe, Professor Gordon as he was called now, and Reb Moshe got a very, very exciting surprise. They got a letter in the mail. Who was the letter written from? Let's see if you can think. Who could? No. They got a letter from Rabbi Avraham de Ger Tzedek, who used to be the Galach Christian de la Tziata. In this letter, de la Tziata blessed them. He thanked them for making this organization, and he said that I am, as much as I can, I'm involved with a lot of merits, a lot of excitement in spreading Yiddishkeit, according to, you know, even though I'm pretty old and I'm not so well. And he said that what I do is I go around and I tell my story publicly. I tell them who I am, where I was born, how chashev I was in the Christian Avodah Zarah church and in the debates with the Yidin, and I tell them how I saw the truth of Yiddishkeit. And even tell them how I went to the Pope and told this to him. Now, it could be that Rav Moshe would have spent much more time in helping to set up this organization in London, but he started to get very worrying letters from his family in Poizna. What were the letters saying? The letters were saying something which is explained in another chapter of Sefer HaZichronos. We're going to skip a little bit of chapter 114. We're going to go back. Let's finish a chapter and then we'll explain maybe in the next chapters what the letters were saying. But the letters were saying, Bekitzer, how the situation for the Yidden is getting very, very hard in Poizna. The Galachim, the Catholic Galachim, are making a lot of redifus, a lot of problems for the Yidin. And Yidin are running away from Poizna because they feel that it's just going to get worse and worse. And one day, Actually, there was a mamish, not just bothering, there was a real pogrom. The goyim and poison that went around breaking and hurting Yidden, Yiddish things, which something that the Yidden were felt was coming. So the Yidden were even more were running away from Poznan. So Rav Moshe's family moved to the city of Prague, where Rav Moshe, if you remember before, we spoke about it, how he prepared for himself a place in Prague to live. Right? He already had business, and he went to Prague. It was one of the places he went on his trips. And Rav Moshe also traveled to Prague to be with his family. And he continued running his business when all his sons and sons-in-law were helping. All besides one. The genius, smart... Oh, wow, that's beautiful and colorful. The great genius of Shneur Zalman did not want to be in business, and instead he chose to be a Melamed. But Rav Moshe felt that Prague is also not the ideal place for his family, and he said he wants to try out somewhere else. And he decided to travel to Poland, to look for a good place to live with his family. And after many, many trips and many inspections, he went to this city and that city. He came to the conclusion that Minsk, the city of Minsk, is the best city for his family. He thought beforehand about Krakow, because Krakow was, he actually liked the city very much, because it was a very Tayridika city, and it was very organized. Who?
Krakow was, the police weren't good.
Not, why, what, I'm not sure.
But there's a story about when there was a couple
that... No, but that was many years before. That was like 200 years before this. It was a very old story. The Yidden in Krakow had different groups, associations based on their business. And what was the purpose of this? And they did this in order to learn Torah and do mitzvahs. So the way it worked was that there was a group of anyone who would sell fur, they were all part of this group. If your business was wool, you were part of the wool group. If you were forest business, it was forest. Tvua, whatever it was, different jobs, shoemakers,
tailors,
carpenters, had all different groups. And each group,
jewelers,
and each group had a parnas. They had someone in charge whose job was to look after
and,
all the yidden of the group to make sure they're learning Torah
mitzvahs.
Shoemakers, right? And the way the group was, they would always get together to learn and to daven. So this was something that the Moshe very liked very much. There was no such a thing, a Yid, who every Yid had a group that he belonged to. And another thing that Moshe was very impressed about the city of Krakow was that all the Yidden of the city, whether he was rich or poor, they did whatever they could do to get a son-in-law, a Ben Torah, for their daughter. And they would support these sons-in-law. They would give them. They said, "You stay and learn, and I'll make sure you'll have, you know, you have money for parnasa, you'll have food to eat and sleep. Not less than 3 years."
Look,
and this way, this way, the city of Krakow became filled with Yungalait b'nei Torah, who sat and learned for years and years, and the place was a real Torah-dicka place. So Rav Moshe really, really liked the city of Krakow, but in the end, he chose not to live there. What was the reason? Very interesting reason. Rav Moshe found out that the Yidden of Krakow, the Lamdonim of Krakow, they don't learn only Nigla, only Gemara, they also learn Kabbalah. Rav Moshe was against learning Kabbalah, he had his reasons. So he said that he'd rather live in the city of Minsk, which was also a big Torah city, but they did not learn Kabbalah over there. So his entire family, which means he didn't have little kids anymore, maybe he had some younger kids, but he had mainly his his children and their families. Right, and he had married children and sons-in-law, right, with their families.
What did you say?
He said married children and married sons and daughters.
He said red.
That's what he said.
Red?
Married. And they also all came with him to Minsk, besides his son Shneur Zalman. Shneur Zalman, who also left Prague, but he didn't go to Minsk, he went to Vitebsk because he was a Melamed, and all the families that he taught their kids moved to Vitebsk, so he went with them to Vitebsk. And that's how Rav Moshe's family broke up to two. Now in Minsk, Rav Moshe stopped being involved in in Inyani of Tzibur, and you know, like taking care of Yidden, and he said he already had free time, and he said, now I'm gonna just learn. And he also continued to learn Sai Torah, and Lahavdil also sciences, also the Mudichol, and he also especially. And especially he learned new languages. So Rav Moshe was outstanding in Minsk, because Rav Moshe wasn't the only Talmid Chacham in Minsk. Minsk was full of Talmid Chachamim, but Rav Moshe was the only one in Minsk who also knew a lot of science, and the residents and the Lamdanim of Minsk, they looked up to Rav Moshe very much, not only because of his greatness in Torah and because of his yichus that he came from the Maharal, but also because of his chachma in other things besides Torah and other chachmas. But Rav Moshe didn't have anyone to talk to about science in Minsk, which first it made him tsar, because you know he didn't have anyone to discuss these things. So even though he enjoyed living in a Yiddish Torah-dik city like Minsk, but it still he was a little disturbed. And because of this, Rav Moshe would travel a lot out of Minsk. He would go to Italy, to France, to England, and he would go mainly for business. But he wasn't only business, he also went so he could meet other Yidden who were very smart in science, also to talk to them about science. And another reason why he traveled, which we said before already, remembers, Rav Moshe he loved to collect. What did he love having? See? Tzvarim and Kisvei Yad. And
the library is over there. It's that when
Rebbe
went to the Catholic library, it's
good. The Vatican. No, they had also Yiddish from there. They had all different Tzvarim.
But they have. He only looked at the Yiddish or at the science?
He probably looked at the science also, but he mainly went for the Yiddish Tzvarim. Well, yeah, Yiddish says that he would buy Sfarim because he had both in Torah, Laha, and Lahavdil science. Now, during his trips out of Poland, out of Minsk, he also used it to meet his good friend, Professor Gedalia Moshe Gordon, who in the meantime moved from London to Minsk. I'm sorry, to Paris, to France. And he was very, very famous. And besides, not only would they meet, they also would write letters to each other, and they had a very, very strong connection. Now, Rav Moshe, he really appreciated beauty. He saw that he believed that according to the Torah, beauty is a very nice thing. It's very important to have beautiful things. Why? Because he knows that it says, he smelled of one of the mitzvahs, just like it says that Torah likes when things are beautiful. That's why mitzvahs have to be beautiful, so beauty is a good thing. And even if someone had a nice handwriting, it was something that he appreciated. Because he said, not only what you write has to be nice, which means you have to write nice things, you also have to write it in a nice way, in a nice handwriting. And when Rav Moshe would see a nice handwriting, it was worth a lot to him. Another reason why Rav Moshe was so into beautiful things was because, if you remember, what was his business? Rav Moshe, very good, jewelry.
Jewelry.
And antiques and art. So Rav Moshe also, by nature, he was also an artist. Now naturally, I don't know if he was in drawing, but he knew how to make nice things. Now, yeah, made nice art. You also guys know how to make nice art. You have to use it for Kedusha. Really? Wow. Now, naturally, his house in Minsk was called a Beis Vad L'Chacham in a minute, you'll tell me, okay? Which means that a lot of Talmid Chacham would come to his house to gather. They would gather and talk over there. And the reason was for two reasons. Besides for being a Lamdin and knowing a lot of Torah and a lot of other things.
Can I tell you now?
1 second. He was also a rich man. And he didn't keep the money to himself. He was a big batzdaka.
Now?
So a lot of people came to him, and he had a lot of big Talmid Chacham in his house. Rav Moshe greeted everyone nicely. And he was especially nice to the poor people and needy people. Now, Rav Moshe's wife was herself a big batzdaka. And she especially, one of the mitzvahs that she loved the most, was to care for poor yeshiva bachur. So the poor yeshiva bachur, they knew they came to her house, and she took care of them in her house. She had every day. Between 15 and 20 yeshiva bachurim would come eat in their house, and Reb Moshe and his wife's house. And Shabbos and Yom Tov was even more. And Reb Moshe and his wife actually hired, not only they actually had special cooks, special people that took care of the, just of that this thing. And Reb Moshe lived calmly in Minsk. And whatever he was lacking, remember we said before that he liked to, you know, to talk to other people about science, he made up for that with traveling to, out of the country. Now when he turned 75, he stopped traveling because he was feeling a little old. And he got used to living in Minsk. But one thing that made him sad was there was a group of people that in the beginning, when he came to Minsk, they were very friendly with him, and they stopped being friendly with him. They were going away from him. Who were these people? These were the Nistarim, the secret Talmidim of Yisrael Baal Shem Tov. They started to look at him with not in a good eye, and to keep away from him. And that's because they found out that, and from Reb Moshe himself, that he was against learning Kabbalah. Now Minsk was really a misnagdish city, and with most of the people of Minsk, Reb Moshe lived in Bishalim, and he was a big lamdin, and he was a big batzdak. He was a good person, did ma'asim, so everyone loved him. Now in the beginning, also the Hasidim, the Nistarim, which were headed by Reb Moshe Nissen, the Melamed, Reb Abba the Baker, who were shluchim of the Baal Shem Tov to Minsk, they were very friendly with him. And from time to time, the Baal Shem Tov would give them missions out of the city. And they would disappear for a little period of time, they would come back. And only a few people knew about their connection to the Baal Shem Tov. But everyone knew that they were, there was a secret that they were Chassidim, but everyone knew that they were Bnei Torah and Yirei Shamayim and Baalim Midas Tovus. So of course they were friendly with Reb Moshe, and especially after they found out that he came from the Maral, which the Maral was, they knew it was a big mikubel, so they respected him even more. The Maral was the Nistarim and the Mikubalim, the men of the Baal Shem Tov. They respected the Maral very much, and they knew that the Baal Shem Tov also respects the Maral, and because of the Baal Shem Tov, his Chassidim learned the Sfarim of the Maral, and that made it was another reason why the Nistarim, the hidden Chassidim of Minsk, could be friendly with Reb Moshe. And they would always come to his house and talk to him in the Divrei Torah, and they were expecting to hear how he respects Kabbalah. And they were even hoping deep down in their heart that one day they'll find out that he himself is a Nistar. But Reb Moshe, like we know already, was against Kabbalah, but he wouldn't talk about it openly. And the Hasidim's efforts to reveal what he thinks was fruitless.
It's fruitless.
They couldn't find out. But after a long, long time, they did figure out, to their dismay, that he's very, very against learning Kabbalah, and he thinks that it's dangerous because he's worried that people that learn Kabbalah could be affected by some of the people which still belong to the cult, to the group of Shabbos Tzvi, Yimach Shemai, Shemisha, Mirkav. He was worried that you could get in touch with these people if you learn Kabbalah. So of course you could understand that after the Hasidim found this out, since they were taught by the Baal Shem Tov they accepted this Daddy. Fact. That was the fact. One second. With a lot of pain, especially knowing that he came from the Maral. And little by little, they got further and further from Reb Moshe. And they stopped having connections with him. And the Hasidim, the Yeshiva Bachrim, who were connected to the Hasidim, who would eat by Reb Moshe's table, they told him to stop coming to his house because they were worried that he might influence them with his deis. And Reb Moshe felt, it was pretty clear to him, that a very, very big part of his friends and people who used to come to his house are becoming distant from him. And the old masculine Lamdin, Reb Moshe, was very, very troubled by this. And we're going to hear what happened later, Mitzvah Hashem, in the next chapter. Agotenach and Mashiach.